Hello and welcome to another episode of the Just Talking About Films podcast, where we just talk about films. In a few moments, we'll talk about films that we've been watching, and then we'll come to a topic that we discuss together. And I think this week we've tried to take on the impossible. When we were chatting about it, and Luke suggested, I thought, what a great idea. And as we got on with it, it's proven really difficult. So we'll get on to that soon. My name is Ian Sargentson.
And my name's Luke Taylor. And yes, this week's topic may have been hubris. Of all the ones to start on, we are ranking things that I think it might be impossible to rank. but we will get to that in a moment. First of all, though, do you want to go first, Ian? What have you been watching this week?
Yeah, so I've watched a few films this week. As I said last time, I've just found more time in an evening now after my wife and son go to bed. I get my time. So I've got a few this week. So the first one I watched that after we'd spoke last time was Home Team. Was I just wanted something light. It was on it's Netflix. Is it on? Yeah, I think it's Netflix. Home Team. It's Kevin James. Is that the guy? Oh, I mean,
yeah.
Paul Blart. Yeah.
Yeah, another one you mean, yeah.
So it's Kevin James, and he's, and it's based on a true story loosely, I think, although it's quite contested when you look online, about an NFL coach that gets suspended for a year because his team or his team of coaches set out and rewarded their players for injuring opposition players. So he got banned for a year, and during his suspension, he went to see his son who lived across the other side of the country and ended up coaching their team. And learning some lessons, which is, it's all nice and it looked good from the trailer to a degree. Sounded like a nice feel-good story. But just as a credits rolled, it said a Billy Madison production. I was a bit worried because as much as some films are good, there's just always an element of silliness that, or usually always an element of silliness that I just can't really get beyond. And it was the same story of this. It would have been a good film if they just did away with some of the nonsensical silliness. And then Rob Schneider's in it. I don't mind Rob Schneider, but when he's in a film, particularly with an Adam Sandler film, the character's just going to be ridiculous. Yeah. So it was let down badly by that for me. The story was all right, but it was just let down by silliness. So, yeah, I didn't overly enjoy it. I think I gave it 2 out of 5. And then after that, I watched Seven, because for our film club, we were due to watch Seven. So I watched that and we discussed that. It was quite interesting to see the range of views on it, how highly people rated it. And as a piece of filmmaking, I rated really high. And I know some people had different views because the ending wasn't satisfying, because it wasn't all tied up nicely in a happy ending.
Yeah.
It gave it more. That's why I gave it more, because it didn't go down a cliched route, even though what I wanted was it for a happy ending.
Yeah.
But what I got was something I'll remember forever, something I'll talk about, and a reminder that I guess life's not always about happy endings.
It's not. I mean, some people rated it low because it made them feel bad.
Yeah.
But hey, it made them feel. I'd rather the film made me feel bad than make me feel nothing. And it meant to make you feel bad.
Yeah, and that's what I said. I mean, it's a fantastic piece of filmmaking still all this time later, but it was one of the things where I was like, if you'd have stopped it 10 minutes before the end or 20 minutes, 15 to 20 minutes before the end, every time I watch it and say, what do you want to happen? I will tell you, I want the cliched. I want everything to be tied up nicely. I want everyone to go away, live and have it happily ever after. But I think if we did that, even though that's what I want, the film loses something about what it is.
It does,
I think it is so popular because of that element of it. So I love that. Really, really good film. Then I watched, it's one of the things, it's in my mind. I don't know if you ever get this, where you think, oh, I really like this film and I want to watch it. And I wanted to watch Seabiscuit. So I watched Seabiscuit. And I did it another time, I think, a couple of years ago. So I must have watched the film 3 times. But I really want to watch Seabiscuit, this feel-good film. And it wasn't the film. It was another film I was thinking of. And I did it twice now. So Seabiscuit was fine. It was good. But the film that I really wanted to watch was Secretariat.
Oh, right, okay.
So they're both different true stories about hot race horses, and but the Secretariat just has a bit more heart for me, a bit more body, and it's a bit less angsty. So I watched Seabiscuit, I enjoyed it enough, but then when I realised that it wasn't what I wanted to watch, I then watched Secretariat after that and enjoyed that immensely.
It's nice to compare them, which so the Secretariat's yeah. a better, much better film.
Well, I don't know. I think probably Seabiscuit's probably a better made film to some degree. Might it's less because Secretariat is Disney. Mm. So it does that Disney thing where it's all about focusing on the positives. Where Seabiscuit's a bit more, you know, with what's he called? Spider-Man.
Tobey Maguire, yeah.
Yeah, Tobey Maguire, his character is conflicted, and all the main characters have got a story of heartbreak, really, and the horse kind of brings them together. So there's that element of it, whereas Secretariat is much more of the feel good that I was looking for, which is nice all the way through, and I like it slightly more. But I say I made the same mistake last time when I really want to watch Seabiscuit, and then after it, I watched Secretariat. But it is good because it means, as you say, I end up watching both. So. Yeah. And they're both good films, and it just makes me think I want a racehorse, but I don't. It's just because. And then last night I watched Captain Marvel, because what I'm trying to do is go through all of the Marvel films. As you know, I'm not that much of...
So you're doing them in chronological order?
Yeah, so I'm not that much of an enthusiast, but I wanted to watch them all and rank them, really, just for something to do on Letterboxd. So that was the second one, apparently, in the list after Captain America. And after 2 minutes, well, I started watching it on Thursday, I think, or Tuesday or something. And after 2 minutes, I stopped there. I thought, this... Oh.
It and starts thought, very confusing, that film, doesn't it?
Yeah, I thought, I'll have to get back to it and start it again. And I watched it, and I didn't know what was going on. I thought, this is boring. CGI everywhere. It was more like a computer game. And I thought, oh, this is horrendous. I can't wait to write my review about how horrendous this is. I'll tolerate it just so I can do that. And then as the story unraveled and unfolded, it got better. So I didn't overly like the character of Carol
Danvers.
Carol Danvers. She was a bit too, I don't know, jokey and look how funny I am for me initially. But I know that's a bit of Marvel. But as it went on, I found it a bit better, a bit easier. The twist that came, I didn't see that coming. I like that. I like the evolution of Nick Fury, and finding that, and finding, you know, the origin of the Avengers, really. So ultimately, yeah, I didn't hate it, but it started off poor, whereas I thought Captain America started well and went poor. I thought this started poor and got better.
Sure.
So yeah, they're the things I've been watching. So that was Home Team on Netflix, Seven on some streaming thing, Seabiscuit on DVD, Secretariat was Disney, as was Captain Marvel.
Excellent, excellent. I enjoyed Captain Marvel. It was, you know, it was okay. It's one of those ones you get to the end of, fills in some blanks, but it's not going to change the world kind of film.
No, I mean, it got better, as I say. Mm. And I say I like the bit where it shows you how the Avengers got the name and even the Marvel thing. And yeah, I like that.
A bit of 90s nostalgia is always fun.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I only managed 3 films this week. I have been caught up with some TV series instead. But first one was The Tender Bar, on your recommendation from, was it last week you recommended that?
Or the week before, I think.
Yeah. Which George Clooney directing, Ben Affleck as the as a bar owner, and it's about the family and the son. And yeah, I think it was one of those films where I found it enjoyable. It's quite slight, you know?
Yeah.
Nothing against George Clooney, but he's not the greatest director. He's okay, you know, but I think in a different pair of hands, I probably would have, you know, had a tear shed maybe towards the end, but it didn't hit me as emotionally as it could have done. And it's one of those films where it suffers a little bit in that the child actor is far better than the actor playing him as a young adult.
Yeah.
So when it develops through the story, you kind of miss the child actor.
I said it was great up until that point, and when he gets older, it just fell away for a bit for me.
It did. It just loses its impact because whilst the guy's fat, it's seeing the character as a child, which has much more impact.
Yeah.
I don't know what you can really do about that. You can't tell a story of somebody's journey into journalism and writing without having that bit, I guess. And it needed a conclusion where he, you know, even the reconnection with his dad in a sense. But yeah, I enjoyed the start of it, but it lost me towards the end, I think.
Yeah,
you know, it was a fine way to spend the time. I'm struggling to remember details of it now, which is never a good sign.
I mean, yeah, it was just as it got to a young, even like it's like, oh, this coming of age story and his relationship with that girl. It was just, that was just plain weird.
Yeah, he was a bit upset. It's like, dude, take a hint.
Yeah, yeah, and then even she was weird, and when he meets the parents, it was all just what?
Yeah, yeah, I didn't get that. She certainly didn't come off as likable, and because it's a true story, she's a real person. You think?
Yeah, yeah.
She's not painted in a very good light in this film at all. I hope she's okay with the film and the book. I guess it's based on. Anyway, that's yeah, yeah. I mean, guys do get a little bit obsessed with, you know, with girls at some point, you know, and when you get, when, you know, when they get the hooks in you, but he goes a bit far. He doesn't come off in the best light. He kind of looking at it going, you know, you need to move on.
Yeah. His friends are all telling him, aren't they? So,
yeah.
Well, I thought Ben Affleck did well in the film, thought he played a good part. I mean, it wasn't, it was hard to stretch him, but I thought he gave some, a focal point and some heart to it.
Yeah, Christopher Lloyd was good too. He was fun, you know, as the the grumpy one, but has that, you know, those moments of tenderness in there.
Yeah. That was good where he took him to the dinner.
Yeah. That was great. I love that bit. So that was The Tender Bar. That is available on Prime, I think. Is that right?
Yeah, I think so. Prime.
Then I rewatched for the second, because I only saw it once at the cinema, Ghostbusters Afterlife.
Okay.
That's just come out. Sky gave me a free purchase, so I bought Ghostbusters Afterlife with it. And second time round, I've got to say, I didn't enjoy it as much. It didn't hold up for me quite as much. I enjoyed it fine the first time, but the problems for it are more noticeable second time round.
Or maybe I just noticed them first time around.
Yeah, maybe.
I was less enthusiastic than
you were.
You and Connie, weren't I? So
yeah, he rated it one of his highest of the year. Looking at it now, I'm a bit. It is a nostalgia kick, and that's always enjoyable. But I think it's hard to play nostalgia and play laughs at the same time. And I don't think it was enough of a comedy. It wasn't funny enough. A Ghostbusters film should be funny. That's what Ghostbusters is. It's a comedy. And no, to me, it didn't play as a comedy at all. It was so busy kicking the nostalgia thing and the whole Harold Ramis thing that it wasn't funny enough. And it had too many references to the old films in. One that really stood out for me was the Stave Puff Marshmallow Men, you know, the little marshmallow men.
Yeah.
And I was looking at it thinking, this makes no sense. This is only there for fans of the first film. It doesn't make sense in context of what's going on with Gozer or anything like that.
Well, it doesn't, because in the original, the giant marshmallow man was possessed by a...
It was Gozer. Yeah, it was Gozer, yeah.
So but these weren't. How do you get all these mini marshmallows?
No, it doesn't. And I was looking at that scene and thinking, this whole scene would have played much better with Paul Rudd. He hears a scream, and he goes to investigate. Then he comes across the marshmallow man. Then he finds the terror dog. Scene would have played much better if he just heard the scream and found the terror dog.
Yeah.
It would have made much more sense. And so stuff like that, it doesn't work. One thing that's great about the first Ghostbusters film is nobody really, you know, they're sort of building the business up. But when they finally take on Gozer at the end, it's public.
Yeah,
and they've got New York turning out shouting Ghostbusters, Ghost, and you know, all of that stuff is great. And same with Ghostbusters 2, it happens in public. This, it should have happened somewhere other than the farm. It should have been in public. We should have seen the small town overrun with ghosts. We get a glimpse of that, not enough. Like, you know, you want to see the chaos, and then you want to see them win in public, and the end just feels hollow because you don't get that. It takes, you know, nobody has a clue what's gone on by the end of the day. So it didn't have that moment at the end that I feel like it should have had. So yeah, it was okay. I enjoyed it, but certainly it's gone down a bit. So that's Ghostbusters Afterlife. And then, based on another recommendation of you, I watched Another Round.
Oh, Another Round, yeah.
Which I really enjoyed. Really, really enjoyed
it. Good,
wasn't it? It's a strange film. It got me at the start going, you know, when there's the discussion that everyone's born with 0.5% alcohol deficiency, and to be on premium level, you need to top that up. And I spent the first half of the film going, is that true?
Yeah, I did.
It can't
thinking.
Be.
Thinking, should I try that? Not seriously, but you know what I mean? Because it's interesting because there's always a recognition, not always, but for me, there's a recognition that I don't know the complexities of alcohol, but if you have a drink and there's that, you notice a difference, but it's a good difference. Do you know what I mean? There's a buzz, you can tell that alcohol's having an effect on you or whatever. And then I guess that's what it's talking about. But then beyond that, it just gets more destructive or more warps your sense of thing more. And it shows that well in the film. But yeah, the first I was like, is this true? Is this a real theory? And I Googled around it at the end. So
is it true? Is it? I
don't know if it's true, but there's a guy that has the theory, yeah.
Oh, okay. So the theory really exists because I couldn't work out. But but for me, and obviously, is it based on a true story then? Or is it just based on the theory?
Yeah, I think so.
Fascinating for me, it's a frustration when you're watching it because they start operating and it starts having an effect on them. That he starts being a better teacher at school, and they all start doing their jobs better. And you think, okay, that's interesting, but then they up the level too quickly, And yeah, that guy with the beard, it's all his fault. He's the one who suggests taking it too far. If they'd have stayed at the level, I'm fascinated to know if they'd stayed at the level that they are, whether they would have had a better job.
Well, I think that's part of what it's doing. I think it was challenging the drinking culture in Denmark and other countries, you know, where the age is 16.
Yeah.
Like, as the teacher was saying, we know you do this and you all do that run they're talking about at the beginning, and we know you have to drink. So it's that, and it's a culture. And it's the kid, how much do you drink? And he's like, but as much as it was about that, for me, I love the element of the friendship aspect of it, because they were a close-knit group and you'd see that all had the struggles, particularly Mads Mikkelsen's character. As much as it was about the experiment, there was that lens into their life as well.
And Mads Mikkelsen was brilliant.
He was outstanding.
You're so used to him playing the bad guy that we don't appreciate outside of Denmark, I guess, how good an actor he is. And he plays this guy who's just numb to life so well. And sad, captures his sadness so well.
Yeah, he does. Yeah,
very good.
You're really warm to him, don't you?
Yeah, yeah, you feel for him, you want to see him succeed. When he starts stepping out and being good at his job, you're rooting for him the whole time.
Yeah, especially when there's been the intervention, and when he gets the text at the end, I was like punching the air, mate. I was like, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean. Yeah. So very good film. That was on Sky, and really enjoyed that. It's takes that level. It's not one to watch with your phone in your hand because it's subtitled.
Yeah, yeah.
But, very good film.
And you'll have to watch the other one I watched with him. I can't remember what it's called now. Riders of Justice. You'll have to watch that as well. That's Mads Mikkelsen as well. He plays a slightly different character now, more complex character in some ways.
So, I'm going to add that to my watch list. Excellent. But yeah, good film, worth watching. And it's an interesting discussion. It really is an interesting discussion. And it doesn't glorify the use of alcohol at all.
No, the opposite, I think. It shows you the point where it becomes counterproductive, it becomes destructive, it becomes addictive, because you see some of them struggling with the addiction aspect, some of it struggling with their life. I mean, there's funny bits in it, or bits that are humorous situational wise, but not humorous in real life. Do you know what I mean? So, so I think it tackles the issue really well. So I enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's very good. It was very good. So that's all I've seen this week. I've got a few cinema visits booked over the next few days, so I should have more in the week coming up. Off to see Uncharted tonight.
I was thinking about that one. I might try and get to see that over the next few days. I don't mind the look of it. I mean, I played the games, and there's not many crossover well from games to film, especially when they're like this big adventure games. I mean, some people think series are better, like The Witcher and different things, but Uncharted, I'm worried about. I think Tom Holland's a great casting. I think he fits that well. It's got Mark Wahlberg in, so, you know, it can only be quality. So yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, so we'll see. We'll catch up on that one sometime soon. Great. Okay, so let's move on to our topic for the week, which we decided to do the impossible.
Yeah. Well, it was Luke, we suggest these topics and we put things around, and usually what happens is the first one that suggests something, the other one goes, yeah, that sounds great, because it takes the responsibility off the other one to think about it. And then Luke suggested this. I thought, oh, yeah, that'll be good. It'll be a great discussion. I mean, there's plenty of stuff there. And then I just found it almost an impossible task. So, Luke, do you want to tell the people what you asked us to do?
Yes. We thought, let's rank our favourite Steven Spielberg films. Let's see if we can create a top 10 Steven Spielberg films. And dear me, it was a hard job. It really was, because there's so many. I'm sad there's so many good films that didn't make the top 10.
Yeah, I mean, the man's a genius. And then it was a case of what we've done is we've put our list together, which even just before we started recording here, I was wrestling with and, perusing and considering. But so we put them in an order, and then they got points based on what position they were, and then we've got a conclusive order. Is that right, Luke?
Yes.
Which you know what it is, and I don't know what the result is.
And there's some films that we'll give an honourable mention. Maybe we won't do them first because it might spoil the ones that are in the top 10. But there's some films that deserve an honourable mention afterwards.
There's so many.
There is. I'm looking at the ones now that didn't make the top 10, and that makes me feel sad they're not there.
Well, I had a list of 15, and there's some on there that weren't, and there's others that are probably lower down. It depends, because there's that measuring that quality of the filmmaking versus how much I enjoyed it. So some of the films I enjoyed more higher up the list probably than some films that are better made, but that's the criteria I went with, what is my best.
Yes.
So I had 15, but we'll narrow it down to 10. But my best Steven Spielberg films.
Yes. And before we do that, I guess, what does Steven Spielberg mean to you in terms of his films? I mean, for me, he was the first director I ever knew about. Even younger. Yeah. I hadn't heard of any other director, but I'd heard of Steven Spielberg.
Yeah, I mean, I think I knew his name before I even knew what a director was or what I did, because it was... You know, the age we were growing up, it was always about a new Steven Spielberg film, and he was in and around so many of the good films at the time. And, and he had a funny name, you know, from a young kid from Teesside, so it kind of stuck in my mind, and it would be there. And, and I say he was associated with some of my favourite films from my childhood. So, he was the first director I knew, name that if you'd have said to me at, I don't know, 7 or 8 years old, can you name a film director, would be the only one I'd be able to name.
And he was involved in so much, even as producer. Iconic. I mean, behind you, we got Back to the Future. That's, you know, hey, maybe we should do the top films he produced but didn't direct sometime.
Yeah, he was involved in the Goonies as well somewhere, right?
Yeah, he produced the Goonies and Poltergeist. So many films that were just, you know, all over what we were watching as a kid.
Yeah, and one thing I do like, and I said it before, I think I said it when we talked about one of his, when I talked about one of his films before, is that one film in particular, there's a few of them actually, now I'm thinking of it, what he creates, and I don't know how he does it, I can't put my finger on what it is, and a lot of his films, is that rather than just observing through my eyes what is going on, it's almost like I'm placed there. I can feel what's going on, I can smell what's going on. I can, it's just, I don't know what he does that catches it, but I feel it all. It's like I'm placed in it rather than I'm watching it from outside. It's like I'm there.
Yeah. Yeah. So good. I mean, nobody is, I mean, and consistent throughout the years as well. He's, you know, some directors, you get ups and downs, but that's why what made this so hard is you look at the films he's done and there's not many that I'm not keen on. Not many at all.
Yeah. And there's so many, such a variety now. So for me, there's one particular area that I find, just looking at, that there's real strength that he does. But, you know, you've got sci-fi in there, you've got historic things, you've got, you know, almost like horror kind of things. There's
and even now musicals.
Fantasy. There is, yeah, there's just so many different things in there.
Yeah, so good. So good. So we'll start with the top 10 and then we'll pick some films that didn't make it that we just want to highlight. And so we'll do the film and then we'll explain each of us what it is we like about that film.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. So at number 10. We have. I won't do that again. We will have Munich.
Munich. Munich. Yeah. So what did you like about Munich, Luke?
What I liked about Munich is it was one of those films where you feel like you've been through the ringer by the end of it. Mm. It's one of those films that the subject matter is not glamorous. You know, it's the it's Mossad getting revenge for the assassination of the Israeli Olympic team at Munich. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those films where it's revenge, but by the end of the film, you feel like revenge isn't worth it. Mm. And it really puts you through the ringer. And no, I think nobody comes out with that film clean or looking good. And and you're like, it's makes you struggle to think, because you're following Eric Barner's guy. But at the same time, you're like, this isn't right, what's going on here, you know? Mm. And I just love that it just puts that, how it, revenge doesn't lead anywhere. And revenge just leads to things getting worse. And it's a fascinating film. It's a hard film to watch. And, you know, it just pulls you in emotionally, I think. It's a great film, great film.
Yeah, it's one of the things that, as I say, it's, for me, that it does very well is when it's based on a true story or real events, it's difficult because you'll always come under increased scrutiny, really.
Hmm.
But the tension that is held in there, and as you say, it's easy to make these things, depending on your leanings or your frame of reference, quite black and white, quite, you know, this is right, that's wrong. And there's none of that. It's just murky from start to finish. As you say, you don't empathize. Well, you empathize with everyone and no one all at the same time, I think.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I just think it captures that very well. And as you say, it's more of an emotive experience rather than an entertainment thing or an enjoyable thing.
Yeah, indeed. The message of it to me is violence gets you nowhere.
Yeah.
And it's good. Good message. Okay, number 9, Empire of the Sun.
Empire of the Sun. Hmm. So what it didn't make my 15 and I didn't mind it, but I haven't seen it for a long time. I know that I enjoyed aspects of it, but I can't really tell you what. So this might be all on you.
Empire of the Sun is one of those films where I remember seeing it very young. I remember watching it with my mum over on New Year's Day, I think, but a long, long time ago. And it just struck me because it's a child's view of World War II. And I think I was younger than him at the time, Christian Bale. And it's a true story. But I've never understood, even little things like how it must have felt going through that, some of that stuff, the concentration camp stuff, and it's a kid trying to get back to his parents. And you know, I really, as a kid, I just remember I really just really related to it and felt for him. And but I think it takes the horrors of war from the view of someone who's almost observing it but going through it at the same time. And I think, you know, the life in the concentration camp and how, you know, society still exists in there. And even in that, the Japanese aren't the bad guys, and he makes friends with this Japanese kid at the other side of the fence. And, you know, I found it just such a fascinating look at war from a normal person's point of view.
Yeah. I mean, it's a Japanese invasion of China in World War II, isn't it?
Yeah, of Hong Kong, I think, yeah.
Yeah, and some people consider this to be his best film.
Yeah, yeah, I think it's epic, it's long, but it's it always just transformed me. And, you know, I like war stories that aren't the traditional type of war story.
Yeah, and I think for me, it might need a rewatch because it's a long time, maybe it's over 10, 15 years maybe since I watched it. So what was it, 87 it came out? So I remember it was a big deal but I was a child then, a young child, so I didn't care for that. But I remember watching it maybe later on when I thought I was all cultured, thinking, oh, I should watch this, and thinking it's just long. But enjoying aspects of it. But I think I need to give it a rewatch to critique it properly, really.
How he goes from privilege to nothing, you know. It takes you on a journey. I think it's a very good film. One of my favorites. I don't think it made your top 15, but I think I had it so high. It came in.
Yeah, but that's only, as I say, it's only because I haven't seen it for a long time. The same as I haven't seen the new West Side Story, so I can't rank that. I've just got to rank the ones I've seen.
Yes, that's one of the ones that's going to happen. Oh, no, I'll not spoil it. Right. Okay. Number 8, we have Catch Me If You Can.
Yeah.
Which I think is a great, great film, Catch Me If You Can. And shows he can do this lighthearted. It's a comedy, but it's kind of a little comedic, but it's an amazing true story.
Yeah, another true story.
Yeah.
But it is lighthearted. The cast is unbelievable. I think Hanks and DiCaprio are brilliant. It's just a story that you're going, wow, no way did this happen. And, but it's just done really well. And I don't think it gets the credit it deserves.
No, it's often overlooked.
Yeah, I think it is just a fantastic film that I love to watch. And it's so quotable as well.
Yeah, it is. And there's this kind of wish fulfillment as well. You're watching, you say, there's no way somebody's done all this. But it has that wish fulfillment of like almost, you know, you want to step into this, you know, the way he wants to become a doctor. So he pretends to be a doctor.
A pilot, when he gets on that seat that you get onto, it's like, if anything went wrong, you're going to be called to fly this bottle that takes.
And Christopher Walken, I think, is brilliant in that film.
Yeah.
Is playing his normal type, but there's like, the more the film goes on and the more you begin to see him through his son's eyes as he grows up, you begin to realise actually he's quite almost pathetic, tragic man. And even though he's built up, you know, and it's an interesting way of looking at your parents, that, you know, you idolise them as a child. And then as you grow up and become more mature, you begin to see areas where they lack. It's a fascinating father and son story, I think, in that one.
Yeah, it's a film I really, really enjoy.
Yeah. Very good film. Very good. Okay, number 7. One that you liked less last time you saw it, which is Minority Report.
Yeah, so I remember watching Minority Report and thinking it was revolutionary. You know, really good concept. And I watched it recently and just some of the special effects were just poor. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, and that's, you know, at the time I thought, wow, this is amazing. So it was just, and I'm like, so you should be able to get beyond that, but sometimes I'm just a bit petty and can't. But as a concept, as a film, as something different, as even ethical, the questions it asks ethically and morally, I think it was good. I think the casting was solid. It was kind of like a thriller, but as a sci-fi, and it's even so, yeah, I did like it. I just didn't like it as much as I did at the time, but I think that's totally understandable because at the time it was, you know, it was all like, wow, look at these effects.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a very good film. It's as a hard sci-fi, I really enjoyed it. It asks a lot of questions, but also even those spiders that are coming looking for you when he's got his eyes covered over, and it's got so many visual things in it that you just get you there and then. And I think it's a very clever film, and it keeps you going right to the end. And I remember first time I see it, I had no idea how it was going to end. And that's always a good thing. And I really, really enjoyed Minority Report. I thought it was a very good film. Okay, number six, we have Saving Private Ryan. You had this one very high on your list, didn't you?
Yeah, this is my favorite Spielberg film.
Yeah.
This was number one for me. Not just, but from that opening scene, again, another one that we're talking about that's based on true events. That opening scene, I've never seen a scene that I'm like is more memorable to me. Mm. And there's plenty of scenes that I love, but that opening scene of Saving Private Ryan when they land on the beach just brought home the absolute horror of that situation, the absolute fear that must have been going through those young lads. At that moment, even though they've been sold this thing, you've got to serve your country, stepping off that boat. There's nothing that will come close that I can imagine me to doing that physically or mentally. And it captures that side of it. It captures the physical side of it, just how much of a massacre and a slaughter it was. And then as the story goes on, there's the human element to it, that this poor woman has suffered so much loss. That within this massive machine and this massive mission, that they try and do something kind for this one woman. And I say the cast is superb. Visually, it's outstanding. And I just love it. And so many levels, bringing on the horrors of war, the good of humanity and these small acts, the difficulty. The story, it's just a beautifully told story that has just so many facets and elements to it that I just love.
It's such a raw film, isn't it?
Oh,
yeah. It really is. I remember when the first time I saw it, I was not prepared for that opening battle. I mean, it was how indiscriminate the bullets were.
Yeah.
You know, and it really hit you home. You know, you have no idea. You could be as brave as you want. You have no idea when that bullet's going to hit.
Yeah,
and
it's just horrifying. The sound as well. The sound on it—it's like pew, you can hear all the bullets and the ricochets. Yeah.
And when they were coming through the underwater as well, even underwater, it was just one of the. I think it took a long time to get past watching the beginning of that film.
Yeah,
nothing. I think I've seen nothing that captures the horrors of war quite like that.
No, and there's other good war films. You know, I mean, recently there's been a few. Do you know what I mean? And
often inspired by that opening.
But they still don't, for me, that's taking that scene alone, even though the rest of the story I think is quality, taking that scene, it just doesn't come close to me going, right, that's it. You know, when we used to read in history, all these young men slaughtered 18 to 21, and I've been to, I've been to France and seen some of the war graves, and you look at the ages of them. And you see that been Normandy and all these places, and it kind of does. But you're going, I still can't quite grasp the severity of it until you watch that film. It doesn't fully, but then I'm going, right, that must have been awful. Just bodies everywhere. Just as soon as they step off, before they step off, in the water, stuck on top of each other, underneath bodies, the noise, yeah.
And it doesn't glorify it at all. I mean, you look at something like Hacksaw Ridge, for example. That's it's gruesome, it's graphic. It maybe goes a little far sometimes, but it doesn't capture the horror the same way Saving Private Ryan does.
So I just say it's my favourite film. It is, in terms of what I think is his best films. There's others that we'll discuss, no doubt, and there's different elements and maybe more. No, I don't know if they are high profile, but for me, if I had to choose one to celebrate and honour above the others, it would be Saving Private Ryan.
Yeah. Great film. Number five, we have Raiders of the Lost Ark, which is by far the best of the Indiana Jones films.
Yeah,
by far.
agree.
And is just one of those films where it's just so iconic and so many. I mean, even rewatching it now, you think it's a film just full of good bits. That's what it is. It's like somebody has just put all the good bits in one film. And it never stops being an enjoyable film.
No.
Even from the opening, you know, when we first meet Indiana Jones, that opening bit where even if you've never seen anything about any of these films before, you know in those few moments, this guy's a hero. You know, the way he's introduced, that opening scene is just, it's so good. It's so good. And it's been often imitated, but it's never been equaled.
No, that's fine.
And we'll find out probably when I go see Uncharted. It still hasn't been equaled.
Yeah. And then there's another film coming, isn't there?
Yeah, there is. But even they've never been able to recapture, I don't think, Raiders. I mean, I'm a big fan of Last Crusade, mainly because it hit me at the right age, really, you know, really enjoyed it. Temple of Doom a bit less so. Kingdom of the Crystal Skull is just the worst. It's just the worst. but nobody else has managed to create even you look at all the films that have tried to be like this, can't equal it.
No, and I think there's credit in that as well. No, to Spielberg obviously, but to Harrison Ford or for the casting, because you think it. The credit that I think lies now is that. So you choose Mark Hamill. I know it's difficult because they've had different careers, or even Daniel Radcliffe, for instance. That you call these people are in iconic roles. But with Harrison Ford, they're both as iconic as each other. You get Han Solo and Indiana Jones. It's equally believable. They're both equally iconic, equally believable. And it's not like, oh, that's the guy who played. That's the guy who played both of them.
Yeah, yeah. He's great. But with Raiders, what really gets me, and I don't think Spielberg's repeated Raiders in that sense, is it's so well shot. Like every shot, it's like every shot's a painting. And you look at the other films, and I think that you look at Temple of Doom, you look at Last Crusade, he doesn't capture that. I think with Raiders, Spielberg was out to prove, because he's just come off the back of 1941. Which was a big flop, had gone over budget, over time. And he was, it's hard to think, Spielberg was, people were questioning whether he still had it. And so Raiders has him out to prove a point, and he doesn't just prove it. He goes above and beyond and goes, you know, I'm the best. Love Raiders of the Lost Ark. Great film. Great film. Okay, next one. Number four, we have Schindler's List.
Yeah. This is number two for me. I think it's just, and I've talked about it before, it's probably the most powerful film I think I've ever watched. And that's from everything. The subject matter, I think, is always going to be tough. But we, again, like the war, we'd heard about it at school, and it's difficult to grasp it. You'd heard of the horrors, you'd heard of the camps, you'd visited, you know, concentration camps, and it's take the information in is easy,
yeah.
And but to get the severity and enormity of it is difficult. Schindler's List helped me with that, and the one way I think it did it is as harrowing and horrific as the whole thing was. There was a story of hope in there. One man who reluctant or whatever he was initially did some good. Do you know what I mean? And so that story, rather than just looking at there was. You know, a bit of positivity, because otherwise it could just be crushing. But the fact that it was shot in black and white, the scene with the girl, with the court, so many powerful moments in it, just image-wise, symbolism, sound, acting. I thought Liam Neeson does an incredible job. As I say, at the end, there's no celebration, but it on a whole, as a story, it kind of makes you ashamed to be human. But somehow there's a thread running through it that kind of restores your faith in humanity. It's such a complex thing. It's just such a powerful film that I think you should have to watch before you leave school.
Yeah, yeah, it is. It should be required watching. It's a hard film to watch.
Oh,
you never sit down and go, I fancy shins of this today.
Yeah, I've watched it twice in my life, and I don't think I'll watch it again.
No, I've seen it a couple of times, and every time. I mean, it's a film that just emotionally is hard to watch. And you're in bits by the end of it. You know,
yeah.
It'll take a hard person not to be in bits by the end of that film. And when Oscar Schindler breaks down at the end and says, I could have done more.
Yeah.
Dear me, every time. I mean, it's a hard, hard film to watch.
And that's the reality of it. You know, you're going, one way you're going, oh, yeah, you've done well and he's great and people like him. But the severity of the situation, you know, 6 million Jews, and he's going, I could have done more. And that's because it was such a huge thing.
Mm.
It was such a massive, massive loss of life. Do you know what I mean? That he's saying, I could have done more, because he sees the severity of it. He sees, yeah, it's just so powerful and just so hard hitting.
And the fact that Spielberg is Jewish means he gets it in a way that I don't think another filmmaker would have done.
No, absolutely. And I think, yeah, it's just captures it. And yeah, just there's so much to it. And we could be here for hours just talking about the different aspects of it. But visually, I think ultimately it's harrowing.
Yeah.
And that's the testament I give to it, because any film about that subject matter, any film about the Holocaust and, you know, Nazis killing the Jews, should be harrowing.
Yeah.
And there's others that aren't, there's others that have tried and they've kind of captured a bit of it, but this, and even though you know that it doesn't come close to capturing the full horrors of it, because it's just a film showing you a little bit that it gives you someone on the outside who doesn't, I don't know, is trying to understand. It gives you a glimpse into it.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. Excellent film. Excellent film. But one I probably won't watch very many more times.
No.
Number three, on a completely different a different note, we have E.T.
E.T.
E.T. E.T. is, to me, genius. The whole film, the way that, and again, something you don't even realize until somebody points it out to you. It's all filmed from that child's eye view. Yeah, every adult's tall in it.
You only see them from the waist up, don't you?
Yeah. The interaction between the kids feels so real. And it just builds and builds the story up to that moment where they take off on the bikes. It's just like this, it's had such this build up to it. And then it's one of those films where the end, where the ship takes off and the music just bursts through like this crescendo. It's like the whole film just goes like that and builds to this crescendo. There's no dipping in that film. It just goes like that all the way through, right to the end, and just takes you emotionally with it the whole way up. And it's such a moment at the end of that film that it's magical.
Yeah. And I rewatched it last year, and I think the biggest compliment I can pay to the film, or the biggest honour I can give it, is that when I watched it as a child, it transported me into this world of this alien and all the emotions about people chasing him and wanting to do stuff to him to, you know, him dying, all of this. It did all of that. But as an adult, it did exactly the same.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? As an adult watching it, I was a child again, fully in that place, fully, you know, wanting to be Elliot's best friend, fully, you know, getting all of that, laughing at the places that it just turned me into a kid again, and not in a weird giggly way, but in a lost in the magic and wonder. And I think it was one of the first films, along with Star Wars and Superman, probably, where the impact, and I wouldn't have been able to articulate this then, but the impact of the score really is apparent.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? The music in there. Obviously, as you become older, I've become more aware of it, but that theme tune, riding my bikes, a little BMX as a kid, I always was wondering, will it take off? Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Hoping that I'd take off if I pedal a bit faster. But yeah, it is, and I think magical is probably the word. It just transports you somewhere else. The bit at the beginning where no one says out, I think it was one of our first guests, the chap you used to work with.
Oh, yeah, Simon, yeah.
Simon had pointed out that no one says out for the first however many minutes of the film. It's just torches and different noises and this, you know, E.T. fumbling around in a forest. But there's a tension.
Mm.
There's a whole, ooh, this is. So it's just a consuming, all-consuming experience watching E.T.
Yeah, that's great. And some wonderful performances out of the child actors. Something Spielberg is really gifted at.
Yeah.
All of them absolutely believable.
Mm.
Okay, number two is Jurassic Park. Do you want to go first or second?
No, you go first.
Jurassic Park is, I remember the first time I went to see Jurassic Park at the cinema. It absolutely blew my mind. I think, you know, there was a lot of hype about the dinosaurs and how good they'd look. But I remember just sitting there, just absolutely believing 100% I was looking at real dinosaurs. The idea of the theme park and all of that, it just captured my imagination in such a way. And I found it absolutely, I was sat there thinking, this is the best thing I've ever seen in my life.
Mm.
I remember thinking that when I first saw, I mean, obviously it's, you know, there's better things I've seen since, but I remember just sitting there, just absolutely blown away by it. And, you know, talk about being transported in again, I was transported to absolutely on this journey with these people. And I think it's one of those films, I've probably seen it so often. And whilst I quite like some of the sequels, nothing captures what it's like to watch Jurassic Park for the first. It's one of those films I wish I could see it for the first time again.
Yeah.
I wish I could forget it so I could watch it again.
Yeah. I think, yeah, for me, Jurassic Park is, and I think I've said this before, that for as a cinematic experience, it's right up there.
Mm.
It's like a, and I know most films are, but it's like a film that was created solely for the big screen.
Yeah.
Now I've watched it on my telly and it's good, but a cinematic experience with the sound, again with the score, with the whole thing. And this is what I was talking about at the beginning. That Spielberg has this talent. This real talent to be able to put you in there. So when that famous scene is with the water and it shakes,
yeah.
I don't just say, I feel it. I felt it in the cinema and, you know, it wasn't shaking, but I was like, oh yeah, he's coming.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the sound and the imagery, and it's almost like I was in, not virtual reality, but you know, in 4D cinemas.
Yeah.
It was almost like I was eight, way before I even knew what they were, that it was like. and it does that so well. I think the story's good. I think the theme park idea is genius as a way of holding it all together. I know it was a book, but capturing that. Yeah, it's a film that I enjoy. I've got a friend, Andy, who just loves them. And I think I only really, really liked the first one.
Yeah.
The rest are okay, but
that
first one is just head and shoulders above the rest of them.
It shows such restraint as well. I mean, for the whole beginning of the film, you don't really get to see a dinosaur, not properly. You get glimpses here and there, snout or something, and then even when they start the tour, you get nothing, and you get, you know, no shows, you get the T-Rex not showing up, and the first thing you see is that Triceratops, that sick Triceratops. And but it shows such a straight, and then that moment where the T-Rex finally emerges is it's amazing, brilliant moment. And
again, well, very well cast, I think.
Yeah, very well cast, and music again, another huge thing on that film. Love it, great film. So that leaves us with our number one, and there could only really be one number one when it comes to these films.
Guess, isn't it?
And that's Jaws. Jaws is, I think, will always be one of my favourite films ever.
Yeah. I think for me, it's probably impacted my behaviour more than any other film ever. So
yes, you're still scared of the water, aren't you?
Scared to go in the sea since the first moment, first time watching it. And, you know, I grew up in the North East, so it was the North Sea. There's not that many great white sharks in the North Sea, but still scared. In any sea that I've been around the world, to go more than knee deep is brave for me. So it's usually halfway up my shin so I can see anything. And purely it started with this film and then it just became a thing, I think.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
And that's a credit. It just terrorized me.
Yeah, it's genuine fear. I remember the first time watching it. I mean, it's not fear as in, you know, jump scares, although there's a couple of good jump scares in it. It's just this utter dread, isn't it? Every time someone's near the water. And of course, it has the guts to, very early on, a child dies. I mean, yeah. That is, even when you're watching that as a child, that is the most horrific thing, because the child always survives, you know?
Yeah.
And it was just, yeah, good. And not just a good film in terms of the tension, in terms of the, I mean, the effects aren't great. The shark does not hold up and never held up, but it doesn't matter. No. It's just such a good story right through from, even this thing he has right from the start where more than one person's talking at a time and it's been talked over and there's like so much going on and it's just, it feels so natural and feels so real. And you're on the side of this police chief right from the start, right from the start.
Yeah. And I think it speaks into, I was thinking about it the other day, because it speaks into society today for me, when there's this shark and this threat that is there for the whole of the community.
Mm.
And they're worried about tourism and money. Mm-hmm. And what we're going to do, we need to play it down. And there's the whole thing with COVID now. There's the whole argument. Do you know what I mean? Because it's balancing the finances of society, the economy against this threat. And it just came to my mind. I was like, it's a bit like Jaws when they were arguing on Question Time, I think it was. And I was like, yeah, it's a bit like Jaws. And so it doesn't shy away from that, you know, it looks at that. And also... probably more than any other is what I said is that this is what I had in mind when I was saying that he has the ability to pick you up and put you in it. That on the beach at the beginning when he's listening to the radio, I think it's baseball or something, I feel how hot it is there.
Yeah.
I can smell the sun cream. I can hear the seagulls. Like just, and I can't, obviously can't because they're not all there, but that I'm right there. I'm like feeling a bit warm and it just captures how hot it is, how fun it is, that smell of sun cream. Yeah, the imagery is just, it's just really good. And I feel like I've visited that place. I feel like I've lived in that place.
Yeah, yeah. You do. You feel like you know the place, don't you, by the end of the film?
Yeah, yeah.
And I was wondering, it must be every politician's dread to be compared to the Jaws mayor.
Yeah. I don't want to get too political, but yeah. There's some similarities, isn't there? So.
Yeah. And I love the fact that the film changes once they get on the boat as well. It becomes like a different film and it becomes so claustrophobic. But even the camaraderie, you know, they're not getting on, but they have that moment where they're all comparing scars and singing and then everything goes wrong. Oh, it just takes you on that journey with Police Chief Brody, don't they? And the whole time you're just totally there with him.
But even a bit like you don't see the shark that much.
No.
Because of the barrels that are attached to him. The sight of barrels brings dread.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's amazing how just two yellow barrels can make you go, uh-oh.
Yeah. I'm not going to show you the shark. And then again, the music, the score, it's so iconic. It still scares me if you just hear the tune now. I'm still a bit like...
Yeah, so. It's such a simple little bit of music. That is so effective. Mm. It's brilliant, absolutely brilliant. And I think deserves to be at number one.
Well, I obviously don't because I didn't put it at number one. But if I put it at three and you put it at one, then there was a good chance it was going to be right up there.
There was.
but yeah, I've got no arguments with it, but it was number three for me. So
yeah,
on the basis of democracy, yeah, that is... what we're ranking as the just talking about films number one Steven Spielberg film of all time.
Yes, it does show the flaws in democracy, I suppose.
Well, no, that's it. But we've decided that together, otherwise we'd just go with my point of view or your point of view. So
yeah, that's good.
The scoring system, it worked out all right.
So a couple of films that did not make the top 10 but just missed out. I won't do all of them, but we'll do the ones that just missed out. Number 11, we had West Side Story, which means I put that fairly high because you've not seen that.
No.
But that's Spielberg proving once again he can do anything. You want him to do a musical? He'll do it better than anybody else. Number 12 is A Colour Purple.
Yeah, just another film where he's looked at something that's really, you know, about the human condition and the evil that people can do to each other, and filmed that and gone through an individual story, or not even just individual, a community story through that. It's a real, really powerful film again.
Yeah, yeah, very good. Number 13, we have War Horse.
Yeah, again, story about a horse. No, but it is, but there's so much, you know, wrapped up in that horse.
Yeah. You know? For me, I'd never understood. Maybe it was just my lack. I'd never understood World War One, and how we got to this stage where we moved from everybody marching across a field at each other to the trenches. And this film really, for me, when there's that attack and the machine guns come out, changes war forever. You can't just sit on a horse and charge at people anymore. Yeah. And I finally understood this the change that came in with World War One. I'd never clicked with it before, but I loved how you got to see people just living over the hill from where the battle was going on, and how their life was just changed by it. You never think of that, do you?
No.
So,
another very emotive film, I think.
Yeah, I think it's an underrated film and a better film than perhaps it's been seen as.
Yeah.
Number 14, we'll just go to 15. 14, War of the Worlds.
Okay, yeah. So I haven't seen it, so I can't comment.
Have you not seen War of the Worlds?
I don't think so.
The one with Tom Cruise.
I keep meaning to, and I don't know why I wouldn't have seen it, but I can't remember anything about it. So I've either watched it and it was that bad I can't remember anything about it, or I've not seen it.
It's very good. It's got the opening attack of the aliens. Obviously, it's very post 9/11, but it's so harrowing. And you really, again, you feel like you're there. You feel like you're going through that attack. It's very well done. Ends a little bit like, okay. And there's a bit, it lulls a bit in the middle, but it's got some strong moments in it. Worth a watch.
Okay.
Definitely worth a watch. Lincoln is number 15.
Yeah, again, I love it. So just even going through the list, one thing I think stands out for me is Spielberg, although Jaws was top, is he does true stories really well, you know, and biopics and he just historical stories and does them well, seemingly without a huge amount of controversy.
Yeah.
So whether he just gets stories that not many people have heard of, like Saving Private Ryan, or that he just does it, but yeah, he does it really well. Just it's one of the things that I thought before watching, this is going to be so boring. It's got another long run time. Oh, what can it be? Abraham Lincoln, great. I'm not even American. I don't care. But yeah, just real, really good film. Just captures the man, what he went through, his character. The agony of power, really. So
yeah. Well, that's our honourable mentions. What about you? What is your favourite Spielberg film? And did we not mention one of your favourites? Where did we miss? Which films have we missed out? Let us know. Well, get in touch with us on Twitter, on Facebook.
We didn't even mention Hook, did we?
No, Hook. Hook came down at number 18 overall.
Yeah, Hook, we didn't mention. Ready Player One, Bridge of 17. Spies.
Yeah, there's loads didn't make it on. I mean, that just shows how good Spielberg is.
Well, yeah, get in touch. Let us know what you think about it, doing this impossible task. I mean, it doesn't matter what you think in terms of whether you agree with us. We'd still let us know, but this list is definitive. Me and Luke have done it. So this is the definitive list of the top 10 Spielberg films.
Yes.
As brought to you from just talking about films.
Yes, and we'll look forward to seeing you again next time.
See you then.